Hello and good afternoon. Welcome to the Computer History Museum. My name is Marguerite Gong Hancock and I'm one of the executive team here. I'm so delighted to have each of you here for a special program on toddlers and tech. First of all, I want to make a few announcements, and the first is a great surprise. These tags that are available outside the door are for each of you if you would like to have free admission to all of the exhibits today so that you can explore not only our new Make Software exhibit that just opened this spring that has a lot of interactives that tell the story of software, as well as our 20,000 square foot exhibit on the history of computing. Also, opening this later this fall, we're going to have a brand new education center on the main floor that will be for kids of all ages, exploring about innovation and entrepreneurship as well as coding. Look for those announcements later this fall. In the back, there are coloring pages for any of you if you would like, and if your kids would like to have a break, there's a room across the hall called Boole. That's a place that you can have a break. Also, on your chairs, you have question and answer cards at the end, toward the end of the program. If you'd like to add your questions into the conversation, feel free to write your questions, and a staff member will pick those up. And there's also a survey if you want to give feedback. We're always welcome feedback on these programs. I'm really delighted that today's program is organized by our Next Gen Advisory Board, 17 amazing young professionals in tech who help the museum lead forward our initiatives, and many of them are here today. It's also in collaboration today with the Parents Club of Palo Alto and Menlo Park. I'm really delighted to have that partnership. And now I'd like to introduce our moderator today, who will be leading the conversation. It's EdSurge founder and CEO Betsy Corcoran. She has been a remarkable journalist. She was the executive editor for technology coverage at Forbes Media, as well as an award-winning staff member at The Washington Post and Scientific American. Now here at EdSurge, she's leading this award-winning site that brings together news for entrepreneurs, as well as educators, job posts, new products. So she's the perfect one to lead off the discussion and introduce our panelists. Please give a very warm welcome to Betsy.
Thank you. And I have to say good afternoon because it is now noontime. Okay, guys, look, we came here to have a really interesting panel, so that means it goes both ways. So let's start again. Good afternoon. Thank you. I feel welcome now. My name is Betsy Corcoran. I am co-founder and CEO of EdSurge. We are an online publication talking about everything in education and technology, the intersection of those two, sometimes the collision of these two things. We believe in schools, we believe in teachers, we believe that technology has a role, but not every piece of technology at every point in time. I was really thrilled to be invited to come to the Computer History Museum today and moderate this panel because the questions around technology and education start at a very early age. It starts with little kids. It starts with our interaction with little kids and how we are going to raise our children. So thank you to all of you for taking the time today to come here and explore these questions with us. I'm also going to give one completely unsolicited shout out. If you have free time this afternoon after this panel, there is a maker fair going on at the San Mateo Fairgrounds, an amazing opportunity to go with your kids and explore the physical aspects of technology as well. So I really want to call that out. We have three fascinating panelists who come at these questions from different points of view. And our goal today is going to be to explore with them from the deep expertise that they have, what they have seen about the intersection of technology and young kids. So I'm going to bring them up, and then before we jump into this, we're going to start with a couple of questions for you. So first, let me bring up our panelists. Anne Rose Gavey is the co-founder and owner of Rising Star Montessori School in the city of Alameda. Anne, come right down here. Anne has been involved with education for 43 years. And in fact, before that, her mother-in-law taught in a one-room schoolhouse in Kentucky. So she has a sense of education that spans, literally, generations. Next, we have Carolyn Huflexer. Carolyn is CEO and co-founder of Duck Duck Moose, an enormously popular online application for kids. It's now part of Khan Academy. And she comes at this as a parent. She comes at it from a technology point of view and as a business person, too. And finally, we have Iris Cadiz, who is an MD pediatrician with the Palo Alto Medical Foundation. She's based in the Los Gatos office. All of these folks have kids. So these issues are not just professional, they are personal. And it's fascinating because Anne shared that even though she's been the Montessori person for 43 years, her kids are like utter geeks. Iris shared that her kids are out there kind of doing robotics tournaments as well as getting on bikes. And Carolyn's family are all musicians. So they all represent sort of this fascinating combination of technology and life with their kids. So first, I have four questions for you. If we could bring up the polling questions, here's how this is going to work. You probably have a cell phone with you. If you could pull out your cell phone, and if you can open up at pollev.com, Angela Berman 494. I'll give you a minute to do that. If you do not have the if you do not have web access on your phone, you can also text to Angela Berman 494, and then you go 22333, and then we'll do ABC. So I'll give you a second to open this up, and we have four questions. The first question is, how old are your kids? When you have opened this up, go ahead and respond. And we'll give you about 2 minutes or so to respond. I like asking this question because it's really helpful for us to have a sense of the perspective that you're coming from as well. Okay, give you about 20 seconds more to answer this question. Fantastic. So lots and lots of folks who have toddlers and little kids, and that is the subject of this panel, so you're in the right place. Yay. Okay, next question. Honestly answer the question, how much time in the last day has your kid spent on a device? This is an anonymous poll. I purposefully made it an anonymous poll. I thought about asking you just to raise your hand, and I figured no one would be honest. And so honestly answer the question, in the last day, think about the last day. This is from yesterday morning, Friday morning through today. How much time has your kid spent on a device, a cell phone, a tablet, television? I really appreciate the honesty. Let's be honest about it. Okay. So half of you say none, and then other folks are ranging from a half hour, maybe an hour, and then longer. Okay, terrific. Question number three. Do you have a go-to thing that your kid likes? What is your kid saying to you? Oh, I want to use my phone to do da-da-da-da-da. A go-to thing. This is one where you just type in a response. YouTube. Oh, I confess that is my younger son's go-to as well. That's a little frustrating sometimes. Are you guys getting answers? Is it accepting your answers, or is it having a hard time? Yes? Okay. Everybody's watching YouTube. Photos? Okay. Thomas and Friends. Go Thomas the Tank Engine. Selfies? Great. Okay, we'll give it another 20 seconds. PBS, Dog and Elmo. I had a chance to meet LeVar Burton recently. He does Reading Rainbow. Pretty awesome. Pretty awesome guy. Okay, and the fourth and final question, and this also I ask you to be honest. How much time in the last 24 hours have you spent with your kid on that device? So we saw originally about half of you said your kids aren't on the device, okay? For the folks who say that their kids have spent time on the device, how much time did you spend with them on that device? Very frequently we use it as a babysitter. Okay, let me get it up, here you go. Not always the best strategy. Terrific. Great. Thank you very much. That gives us a little context for this conversation. So I'd like to start off, actually, Anne, with you. You've been teaching for 43 years. Tell us what has changed, particularly in the last 10 years. What do you see differently about this interaction between kids and technology?
Well, when we started our school in 1982, I had a manual typewriter and a ditto machine. You guys know what those were. And then gradually we adopted technology in the office. The children had Commodore 64s, and then they now have Macintoshes. In the last 10 years, children have been using we have a smart TV, so we show backup videos that go along with our summer school themes. Mm-hmm. The children have computer labs starting at kindergarten, and the big thing is posture and ergonomics and internet safety. And now they're starting to record or dictate their reports. After they handwrite them, they'll publish them. So they now publish a newsletter at the school. They do PowerPoint and Microsoft Office.
And one follow-up question to that. So a lot of the things they're doing are things they could have done if they had a typewriter or even just a pencil. Has there been any change in the thinking about how you teach or, you know, pedagogical approaches with technology or not?
Well, I think for our Montessori school, we start everything with hands-on, but the way they record it might be different. They may take pictures, they may video something. They'll do time-lapse video and photography, and some classes will use an iPad app for a follow-up activity.
Okay, so even in a Montessori environment, which we often think of as the least technology-intensive element, you're using these things as tools and using them to supplement the kind of work that kids have been doing for a long time.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Cool. Great. Caroline, why did you start Duck Duck Moose? Tell us a little bit about what the inspiration and your hopes were for doing this.
Sure. So the inspiration for Duck Duck Moose was my own children. So my older daughter was 2 at the time, and she used to walk around the house carrying a Wheels on the Bus book and singing the song. So the App Store was just coming out, and we decided to create, as a project, my husband and I created a Wheels on the Bus app, which was a musical storybook app. We did everything in the app ourselves. He plays the cello, I play the violin, so even the music was recorded ourselves. And from there, we went on to design 21 different apps, and they really range from open-ended creative play and expression apps where children can create their own stories and make their own movies and animations, to curriculum-based apps where we work with educators to design different pre-literacy and math apps for preschoolers all the way up through elementary school.
What do you see being used the most? Because in some ways, designing your own movie, it's actually exactly what Anne is describing she's doing.
Absolutely. And so there's a big range. So in the schools, what's been surprising to us is that our open-ended apps are actually used just as much as the curriculum-based apps, because the teachers can use it as a tool to have students show their thinking. So they can create something in our Draw and Tell app, and then they can voice their thinking behind their work. And then so I think the latest news with us is that we've just joined Khan Academy, which is a nonprofit with a mission to provide a free world-class education for anyone, anywhere. And we're working on a new early learning initiative there for ages 2 through 6.
Great.
Iris, you see both children and parents. You see the intersection of those two. What are some of the questions that parents bring to you about what should I be worried about? What should I do with this technology in my kid?
So absolutely, I get to see this all day, every day. And people want to know how much is too much. I rarely ask the question, are there some types of media that are better than others? And that would probably be a better question, actually. But they're right to say how much is too much, because there's a lot of research to show that there is absolutely an upper limit to what's okay. And at every age, it's a little bit different. I'm definitely seeing in the office more children whose parents are trying to keep them happy during the office visit with their technology.
Hence my question about how much time are you spending with your kid, right?
And they're using it as a babysitter, and that's understandable. During certain medical procedures, it's fantastic. But you know, as soon as you take it away, the aggression and the, I would say, the tantrum is worse than when they would take the crayons away years ago.
That's really interesting. Is there any research that talks about why would tantrums be worse if you're removing a device as opposed to removing crayons?
I don't know that the research addresses why, but there's absolutely a correlation with aggressive behavior and attention problems and several other medical issues and media use.
Okay. Now, I want you all to jump in on this. Iris, you gave us two teasers that I'm sure people are really interested in. One is you said there is an upper limit for different age groups. So we know that a lot of the folks in this room are really interested in the 0 to 3 and then the 3 to 5. I would love to hear what you believe are the limits on that. And then I'd love for Carolyn and Anne to jump into this as well and see whether those seem reasonable from your point of view. So what do we know about limits?
So the American Academy of Pediatrics has put out guidelines. And in 1999, that's the first one that I really remember, where they said nothing under 2 for media. It's evolved into the most recent AAP guidelines were in October 2016, so less than a year ago. And now it's the recommendation is 0 to 18 months, 0 media, and 0 screen time. And there are reasons for all of this. 18 to 24 months, they say it's okay just for video chatting. So, you know, talking to grandparents on Skype or so on. But, you know, anyone who has an 18 to 24 month old knows you're not going to have that many minutes to be able to do it. Their attention span is gone in no time. And then from 2 to 5 years old, it is an hour or less per day of screen time use.
Okay. So forget about it if your kid is under 18 months old. 18 to 24 months, okay to video chat. 2 to 5, maybe an hour. Carolyn, how does that jive with what you see both in practice and then what you'd like to see?
Yeah, so I think it absolutely jives with our opinion. So we highly recommend for parents to look at established, credible, research-based organizations like the Academy of Pediatrics or Common Sense Media that have very clear guidelines on screen time use. And I think that's based on developmental milestones with children, particularly before the age of 2. They can't meaningfully interact with technology in a learning way. But I think perhaps even more importantly, I think Iris alluded to this, perhaps more importantly than just fixating on the amount of time, absolutely use technology in moderation. But think very purposefully about how you're using technology. And that can be very confusing because there are so many apps out there. Even if you just look in the education category on the App Store, there's a lot of apps that are not educational. And so the way we look at it, and I think it's a good framework perhaps for parents to evaluate apps, is looking at the field of the science of learning. So looking at that research that has been done for 20 years on how kids learn best and what are those criteria. So I'll just take you quickly through four of the things. I think in the environments that kids learn best is if the learning is active. So this means cognitively active, mind on. So in an app, that are they actually solving problems versus just tapping? The second pillar of the science of learning is that they're engaged, and that means not distracted. And so that in a digital world is very important, because if the app isn't designed for the young child in mind, oftentimes they have all these bells and whistles, and that's distracting for the learning process for kids. Thirdly, that there's a meaningful learning experience. And so what that means is that it means it connects to the child's real life, like in the case where we're taking photographs of what they're doing at school and talking about it, or if it draws on something that really means something to them. So there was a study where children were watching a character try to solve a mystery and find the missing letters in a certain word. And the retention on that word was much higher than if it was just the word was just presented to them in a rote manner. So story and narrative can be very powerful in technology. And then the fifth one is high quality social interaction. So when you are using technology to Skype with your grandparent, that is, you know, fantastic. In addition, there's some studies that have shown even parasocial relationships with characters, although that's no substitute for a real life, but in a learning experience, in a learning environment where a character asks a child a question about what they're learning and then pauses to have them answer, young children will answer, and that can really help learning. So I think overall, obviously, there also needs to be a clear learning goal with the technology. So hopefully those four pillars can help us like take a look at what's meaningful technology.
So great. So four pillars, you know, active learning, engaged learning, meaningful experiences, and then high quality social engagement. And do we actually need technology for any of these things?
Not necessarily. So it's we need kids to have a balance. And so when technology is used, that can be a lens to evaluate whether it's a meaningful learning experience. But yeah, absolutely. Yeah. As a mom and an app developer, I absolutely believe on moderation with technology, but also when you're using it, you use it in a purposeful way.
Yeah, and talk a little bit about how this, again, is in sync with the experiences that you've had in teaching these kids.
There are these stages or planes of development. From birth to three, the child is literally creating themselves. So that's very much reality-based. They're very credulous. So we tend to avoid saying things like the boogeyman will get you, because they're credulous, they believe you. And yet they can't really distinguish between reality and fantasy. So in the classroom, we'll have photographs of real things. And in that way, technology has been fabulous for more picture books and more realistic portrayals of things rather than just sketches or cartoons. As the child is interacting and literally constructing themselves toward three and four, they start sharing activities with a friend and engaging. And in that way, I think the technology can really help to have you look at a picture and zoom in to the inside of a flower and zoom back out. But again, it has to be something where they're old enough where they can form an image in their own mind, sustain it, and then be able to visualize that sense. That's sort of when they're ready for a little more imagination story or different areas. So I would say what you're saying is very important, that short-term, realistic, attractive, aesthetic materials.
I want to let everyone know that I think on the chairs around you, you'll see that there are cards and pencils, the old-fashioned kind. And if you have a question, if something occurs to you as we're talking, we're trying to save some really substantial time for questions. One of our colleagues here will come around to collect them. So please feel free to jot down a question, and we will make time to go through as many of those as we can. Okay, so just a quick question advertisement there. But let me go back to this question. Why not get rid of all these devices altogether? I mean, you know, we've heard now that number one, Anne just made the point that particularly between the ages of birth and 3 years old, children can't distinguish sometimes between reality and fantasy. And of course, a lot of what we see on the devices is fantastical. Caroline has done a great job of identifying the act of learning and engaged learning and so forth. Why do we need them at all?
I think maybe one thing to think about is, like, if you're going to use technology, what does the technology bring to the experience that is either different or in a different medium that you wouldn't necessarily otherwise have? One example in terms of engagement for a child that technology can do that is often harder to do in the real world is technology can help find that sweet spot or that zone of where what the child understands, and so it's not too hard so that they're going to be giving up, and it's not too easy so that they're going to be bored, but that zone of proximal development where we can serve up, because of all the stuff in the background and the technology, an activity that is perfectly placed for that child at that particular place. But that's not to say you should spend hours on end just learning in that medium, but to reinforce other things.
Iris, is that compelling to you? I'm looking at you, and you're giving me a lot of facial language here that goes, I don't believe this.
So I definitely believe it. I think that there's no way that we're going to stop the technology train that's coming.
Like, it's okay, so we can't stop it.
No, so we should use it and be mindful about how to use it. And there are now more customizable apps, and there are groups of people who are educated as to what's going to be helpful, what's not, what's out there, and it keeps on evolving. And just like you were saying, you know, being able to look into a flower, I mean, it's fantastic. But regardless, still pediatricians are finding that you cannot really just say, well, do that all day, because it's going to take away from some other things, like sleep, like social interaction with other children and with parents, like exploring nature. It's such a slippery slope because the technology has gotten so amazing. But to not lose sight of the fact that the research still shows it is getting in the way of some other things when it's too much.
I want to take a minute and talk about the effect of this technology on parents. And I have a funny story, Carolyn. It may be relevant to you, which is that my husband was on a plane recently, and there was a mom with a kid, and the little kid said, "I want to play with wheels on the bus." That's what she said. Absolute truth. "I want to play with wheels on the bus." And the mom was having a really hard time with the tablet. It wasn't working, or she didn't charge it, or whatever reason. She had some dilemma. And she stalled out. She couldn't actually figure out how to, say, sing Wheels on the Bus with her kid because of her dependence on the device. How much do you see, and this is for all of you, how much do you see the effect of the technology on parents and what they are bringing into the interaction and the relationship with their kids?
Could I speak to this? I see this all the time in the office, where I will be trying to examine a scared toddler, and the parents are spending so much time trying to get the right app up on their phone to comfort the child, when all they really need to do is just be there physically, holding the child's hand, putting cheek to cheek, and they're missing that opportunity where they're letting the technology get in the way of that. And boy, I see that all the time, and it's hard.
Yeah, I think it just goes to the using technology purposefully rather than as a pastime or as a placation device or something like that. So maybe setting some limits around, you know, we're not using it at mealtimes, before sleep time, and what are we using it for? Are we using it for an educational purpose? Then let's have a time for that, a limited time. I think totally agree on the approach.
And what do you see? Again, you have parents, families bringing their children to Montessori. Are they on their cell phones when they're dropping the kids off? And what's the message? Is there a complex message that the parents are sending?
Well, we have this little sign that says, please turn off your phone and stand right here and say goodbye to your child, 1, 2, 3. And we sort of have cell phone free zones right by the entrances to the areas. Once we did a video where we explained parent orientation, they were explaining what circle time is and lining up and all these areas, and the parents said, we want a copy of that video of our kids. And so it can get carried away. I think it can be intimidating if you are not as tech oriented and you feel like this app knows more than you do.
Yeah.
There's an old newsletter I got in person called Growing Child Newsletter that used to get in the mail, and now it's on the website. But there's Growing Child Newsletter Grandma Says, and Grandma kind of like reassures you that you can know better than a lot of apps. And I think that can be intimidating to parents that, oh, they should be here. Today in the class I'm teaching on child development, we can say the development is predictable in terms of sequence, but is flexible in terms of timing.
So spell that out a little bit more, because that's fascinating. Predictable in terms of sequence.
Flexible in terms of timing.
So what does that mean?
It's not a contest. If your one child walked at 9 months and the other one took 13 months, maybe the 13-month-old had more sense. And especially if your first one walked at 9 months and you were chasing. But I think it's so scary for parents on any developmental milestone. There's this whole contest now over your competency as a parent. Does your child know? I remember my mother support group in Berkeley. Well, my child knows 53 and a half words. How many does your know? And it's like, I don't know. You know, I'm busy talking to them. I don't count the words. But it can be very much of a contest and a threat. And the important thing is just for parents and teachers to shake hands, to support their child, and just to feel like they're okay, because they are the expert. We're just here to help you. And these apps, you're the master of the app.
You're the master of the app. That's a great message. Caroline, we started talking a little bit about assessment, about evaluation. Tell us a little bit about how you think about the evaluation part of these apps and the good and the challenging parts of that.
Yeah, I think it is very challenging for parents. So that's why I was trying to give that framework as one method. There are also some resources like Common Sense Media that use specific rubrics to evaluate apps. And I think just as a parent, trying to not just look at the education category, but looking a little bit deeper into what is the curriculum that's being covered. Who are the people that are designing this app? Are they working with child development experts? Are they working with real teachers who understand children? Are they designing it specifically for the two-year-old, then the three-year-old, which developmentally is very vast in those first few years in particular? Doing the research around who created the app.
Yeah. And Iris, this gets to the question that you said you wished parents were asking you, which is, what are the types of media that they should be engaged on? Maybe you could elaborate a little bit or expand on what Carolyn's saying.
So first of all, we know through a lot of research that music is fine, that we're talking more about the screen stuff, that the stuff in front of a screen is maybe a little bit harder to let the imagination still kind of function like it would if you were just having music. So specifically about screens. There are, as Caroline was saying, a lot more things out there, the customizable apps that are customizing on profiles of children on what you put in there as to, you know, I have a two-year-old who is interested in animals. And it can really dial down in that 1 hour that we're saying is okay for a 2 to 5 year old. Well, let's make that hour a purposeful hour, something that actually matters, not one that is just going to keep them busy while they're on the bus or busy in the car or just placate them in some other way. Just like you don't want to use food to placate your child all the time. You really want to be very purposeful about when food is offered, when media is offered. I like to say that media is a little bit like food in that the child has a very small kind of area in which they're going to be able to use that. So it's like the food. You don't want to just give them a piece of chocolate to take up the space in the stomach that could have been with a lot of other healthier stuff. You're instead just giving them kind of the junk food media. That's a problem. You really want to be very purposeful if you're going to use it, and otherwise use balls and crayons and blocks and, you know, all the other things that compete for time in a toddler's world.
again, I've got a lot of questions. I hope if you have some questions, you're putting them down on cards. And if you have a card question, why don't you raise it up high? And some of our colleagues here are going to collect them. Excellent, excellent. Let's talk a little bit about what happens as kids get older, okay? So let's say we've been trying to be pretty good. We've done the right thing, right? We haven't let the kids touch the screens, and then we've started ramping them up a little bit. What does this mean as kids start to get older, and as they even start to get into the elementary school time frame when all their friends are using the internet? What do you see? What do you tell them? I think you all sort of see it from a different perspective. I mean, Carolyn, you see it within Khan Academy. You start to see kids sort of probably level up and start to watch Khan, right? What do you see going on?
Yeah, so I can talk about it from the perspective of being a mom of a 9 and 11-year-old in elementary school, and then also as they're going up into middle school. So with Khan Academy, there's a progression of math lessons that you can do. It's really more designed for upper elementary and middle school and up. In elementary school, the exciting thing is that they can read now and they can communicate. So thinking about creative ways to use media, I think, is a big opportunity in middle school, or elementary school and middle school, is where it's not just a passive, you know, you're just touching things. I mean, but they can create something. And that's been most powerful in the classrooms for us. Teachers have always said that our open-ended apps that allow a child to make a book report and then talk about it, or like make a book talk, and helps the child articulate their thinking. So especially with a shy child who doesn't want to get up in front of a classroom, they're willing to express themselves with this tool. So thinking of it as a tool for expression. But then I think in terms of your question about the internet, there's great information obviously for research, but it's not designed for kids. So under 13 in particular, there are a lot of privacy and a lot of, you know, content issues. So I think really, and especially in that age group, thinking about how you're using research. And we designed an app, Wizard School, with that in mind so that kids could explore things like the flower video, flower blooming, or the octopus getting out of a jar. But that was content sanctioned by teachers.
I think that's important. I think for a lot of parents, the most important thing that a young child can have is conversation and expanded vocabulary. And that would probably be the best gift. If you live in an area, like we're in the Bay Area, we have so much vocabulary around, but if you live in another area, you may not have a chance to have a conversation with a person who likes bugs the way you do. And so I think expanding vocabulary and exposure is really important mindfully, mm-hmm. like you say. And kids can use those skills to explore more than they might normally do.
Iris, what do you see?
So there's more and more talk from the child psychologists that is also resonated in with the pediatricians, where the media use has to be perceived, you should look at it as a potential gateway drug. So you can start out.
That's
with
a
education.
Pretty big statement. Pause on that for a moment, because that's pretty radical. A potential gateway drug.
So we know that allowing some screen time use can lead to more screen time use. And if we're going to fast forward to the adolescent years, over the course of my career, I've seen more and more depression and anxiety that we know is also potentially linked to media use, and specifically the amount of time. So one has to be so careful about what's introduced in these young years in terms of guidelines for timing and for what can be used, but to also just realize if we're talking about fast-forwarding into the adolescent years, it can really be a slippery slope.
But let's pull that apart for a minute. Mm-hmm. We absolutely have seen more depression and more adolescents basically having a tougher view, mood disorders around the future. How strong is the research that links that to screens versus linking it to parents who are saying, hey, you're getting into Stanford and you better be getting those grades?
So you mentioned a few things. First of all, there is clear research on over 2 hours a day in the older years being linked to the mood disorders, depression, anxiety, actually lower GPA as well. But I want to give a shout out to, was it Julia Liscott-Hames, who, yep. The How to Raise an Adult. She's written a book, and she speaks a lot in the area. If you ever have a chance to listen to her, she's the former, I believe she was dean of freshmen at Stanford, has two adolescents herself. She was talking about, basically, the whole concept of, like, okay, so if you want to raise an adult, you start when they're really young, doing things that very purposefully, getting them to adulthood where they're functional at that point. And she wrote this a little bit because she was seeing a lot of dysfunctional, achieving very highly in their academic career, but, you know, unable to do some of the basic things we all grew up doing because we didn't have an iPad in our hands all the time. There is definitely a role for media, but if it's not kept in check, even with the most amazing tools out there, and it does every day, it gets more and more amazing what you can do and what you can see.
And we haven't even seen virtual reality show up yet, which will doubtlessly affect every single child in this room. And the combination of fantasy versus reality in an augmented or virtual reality environment will be profound.
So if every time a child is anxious, from toddler age on, they get media in their hands, it's really tough when they don't have media at their fingertips in the classroom or on a nature hike, if they should be so lucky to go on one. We're teaching them, when we just give it to them as a Band-Aid for that moment, to not be able to cope later on.
Okay, so we have some great questions. Applause to you guys as an audience. You guys are asking really great questions, and I'm going to try to run through them. We'll do this. I'll run through them because there's some really good ones here, and maybe you guys can each pick up on which one. First, a question is echoed in a couple of cards. Should device time be used to reward good behavior or as a consequence or a punishment for bad behavior? Like, if you don't eat your peas, no YouTube for you.
Oh, wow, that's loaded. So first of all, YouTube wouldn't be in the category of educational media.
Sorry, forget the specific reference.
And I don't want to reward eating. So.
That was my, okay.
On so many levels.
Let me reframe the question. Clearly, I added too many embellishments to it. Let's just stick to it as it was written, which is, should the device be used to reward good behavior or as a consequence for bad behavior?
I think using it as a reward is a fine thing to do.
Yes.
I can't put all media in one category.
Okay.
But
it's okay to use it as a reward. Anne, would you agree with that? That sounds like a maybe to me.
One of the goals in Montessori is for the children to experience this timeless sense of concentration and being. And that's what we try to have, that tone in the classroom through all of the times. And I think we've moved beyond having recess as a reward or a punishment. So in some ways I would say media is just part of what you would normally experience in your daily diet of what you would have. So I think breaking it down as a reward can get the kids kind of negotiating different areas. That's ideal. In the reality, it may not work quite so well, mm-hmm. but I think the more if you can give the child that experience of quality of life, almost being bored. Some children, being bored is like, oh my God, I'm bored. It's like, well, no, think about something you'd like to do and struggle with the uncertainty to be able to tolerate frustration to try a little harder, because that's where you achieve the intrinsic learning and reward.
Okay, so I'm going to actually ask you guys to give me a thumbs up or a thumbs down then. So. I know that's terrible and it's binary, but yeah, welcome to our world. As a reward for good behavior, and again, let's say that we're talking about young children and we're talking about it within appropriate amounts, so not 5 hours a day. As a reward for good behavior? Okay. As a punishment for bad behavior?
To remove it, you mean?
To remove it. As a threat, a punishment. So, kid has done something, you will not get to have your device time because of it.
I guess I put the medium because I worry about if you use it as a reward or a punishment, it kind of heightens the scarcity of it. I like the kind of like with food, you don't really want to give that as a reward or a punishment, sort of like you were making food sort of like your digital media diet. So
I will say, and actually several people asked about our own kids. So I have two boys. One is graduating from high school in 2 weeks.
Yay.
And one is in college. And they probably, they are definitely big time gamers. It was extraordinarily hard to be consistent about using screen time as either a reward or a punishment. And color me a lousy parent, but it was just hard. Yes, no? Can you say something about your own kids and how you deal with screen time with your own children?
So Iris. I have adolescents. I have a 10, 12, and 16-year-old. And I do want them to know it's not a privilege. It is a privilege. It's not a right. Some of it is, so the hard part when they're getting older is some of it really is not educational. And so I would say some of what I would be controlling would be the not so educational, sure, have some free time on your phone to play a video game or something like that. If I know, if we're talking about much younger, we're focusing on the toddlers, it's hard to know because if it's educational, you don't get to do your math if you're bad. I mean, it's hard to really say that.
No math problems for you. Carolyn?
Yeah, I think for our kids, we're just on
Remind us what age your kids
nine
are?
9 and 11. So we're just on the cusp of more freedom and independence. So I'm speaking from that perspective. Our kids are still very limited, and I know everything that's on their iPad. They use email and other things like Google Docs for school. And so, you know, I often get the question on the weekend, like, can I use computer now to write stories? Of course. But I still do limit that time because it is other time that she's not going outside or doing other things. So I said, okay, do it for half an hour. So even though it is educational with our kids, I do limit.
But 3-4 years from now?
So I'm very worried about that in terms of social media, particularly for girls. There's all this, documentaries on how that really affects girls. And so I think I'm staving that off until the legal limit of 13 as much as I can. We'll see how that works in practice. But writing a story on a doc is very different from constantly being on social media as your social currency. So if every girl in your class is on it, I don't think I'll be the parent to say that you can't, because I do want her to be able to communicate with her.
I think we're going to have to come back in a couple weeks and do the adolescent version of this panel. It will have very different dimensions, to be honest. Anne, what about you?
Well, my daughter doesn't really like technology.
And remind us,
she's 34, and my son is 31, and he was like born with a computer off of his arm, so he's a total geeky guy, we were probably bad parents for him, but that's what we let him do.
It really actually encourages me to hear someone who's been running a Montessori school for 43 years say she thinks herself is a bad parent. Thank you. I mean, can we say thank you for that? You know. It's hard being a parent, folks, and you don't get graded every second of the day. Iris, you raised a question that several questions came back to, which is you made the point that there is some suggestion in the research and some evidence that you've seen that kids respond more aggressively, that tantrums are more aggressive when you take away devices as opposed to taking away crayons and coloring books and dolls or anything else. So I'd love to hear any of you respond to this. Number one is, can you be a little more precise? What evidence, do we actually see evidence in the research, or are you talking about your clinical experience? And then can you say anything more about like what the triggers are, what's going on? Just elaborate on that point, because several people did come back to that question.
There's a lot of clear evidence of media affecting children in sleep. And when their sleep is poor, their behavior is poor. It's really very clear. So that part, we can already see a very clear association. And then the association of aggressive behavior in toddlers and media use, that's also clear, that there is actually a difference. When there's more media use, there's more aggressive behavior.
And just to push on that for a moment, now you're using the word media. So are you including Thomas the Tank Engine on television and PBS and the Muppets, or what are you talking about?
Fantastic question. The research did not really, that I'd read, did not really ferret that out. It was more hours of screen time. And that's where a lot of the AAP recommendations, American Academy of Pediatrics recommendations, make their recommendations. They will say in terms of the amount of time, and they're not always breaking it down with educational versus not.
Okay.
But the behavior results, did they happen when they were beyond the recommended amount?
Good question. Like, when did they measure that?
No, I just was wondering, like, do you see the change in behavior if there's excessive use?
It's a correlate with more media use beyond a certain point, there was more aggressive behavior. And then to your question about what I see in practice, absolutely I see that in practice.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's nice sometimes when you see a study that's supporting what you see every day in the office, like, oh, great, you know, women who have postpartum depression are sleep deprived and there's a correlate there. Great, I see that every day. I'm so glad there's a research study to support that.
Right.
Same thing with the aggressive behavior with the kids who come in using so much media, and once the media is removed, and what the parents are coming, they're coming in talking about the aggressive behavior of the toddler and what do we do about this?
Right.
And they're the same families who have lots of media use, and I would say a lot of it's not educational.
Do you think that would be a child who can self-regulate, right? Where they, you know, like if you make a silly face, your baby turns away because it's like, that was too much. And when a child has an environment that they're in control of, like a baby can climb up or climb down from something, they have more ability, self-efficacy to choose what they're going to do and dial it down when it's too much. But from what I remember from some of the studies is there's the intensity blasting of the TV and the flickering images and the more adult level of excitement versus a child's tolerance that sort of artificially hypes them up to a certain stage. And then once they're up here, they kind of go, then crash because they don't know how to get up and get back down.
I don't know of research, and maybe there is some out there, on just looking at educational media and how that's affecting the toddlers and their aggressive behavior. I don't think that the studies have ferreted that out.
Right, but probably the regular media.
I wouldn't be surprised if there was a difference.
Because Albert Bandura did a study a long time ago about violence and children watching TV and being more violent, and that was in the 50s and 60s when it first started.
And so here's a very specific question that I think was phrased very well. A person writes, hey, I grew up watching cartoons while eating breakfast. Some of us did, right? Our child eats a healthy amount of nutritious food. Is some screen time during breakfast okay if she's getting the parent engagement later in the day? Okay, yeah, thumbs up or thumbs down? We're getting a thumbs down from the pediatrician. And Caroline? Thumbs down, Caroline.
Thumbs down in terms
thumbs
of
down.
Just
Sorry,
because it's
forget
during.
It, kids. No screens during breakfast.
Well,
why?
Learning. So first of all, if you have intense distraction while you're eating, and that includes actually reading a book, you're mindlessly eating, and so you learn to mindlessly eat, and you tend to stop only when you're overfull. A lot of people will tell me this. A lot of parents will tell me this. I grew up like this. What's the problem? And I don't want to say anything specific to that one parent, but we have a huge problem with pediatric, with children with obesity, and with adults with obesity. It's in epidemic proportions in the United States. So a lot of people will say, well, I didn't do this. Why do we have to do this? Well, I didn't use a car seat when I was a baby. Wouldn't dream of not having my children in a car seat because the data that's known, even though I was lucky enough to not be flung from the car in a car accident. So
really interesting points. Separating food, at least food on a regular basis, everybody's gonna do it once in a while, separating food from media, and actually whether that media is a screen or even a book.
Yeah, a distraction.
I would call it
anything that is an intense distraction.
Yeah.
I mean, I could eat everything in my pantry when I'm reading a good book.
Yeah.
And still be hungry when I'm done.
Right. Interesting. Okay. Now, there's a whole collection of questions about what the responsibilities and examples that parents should be doing are. And we talked a little bit about this, but let's go back to it. And I'm going to read kind of several questions at the same time. One was, how do we set the right example for our own use of technology? And then a fascinating question, which is, well, what's the effect of a baby or a child always seeing the non-screen side of the phone, right? Because you're either talking on it or you're taking pictures on it or something like that. So talk about, let's talk about, explore a little bit more. What should be rules of thumb for parents' usage of technology in the presence of their children?
So I definitely came across several things. I don't know if you can speak to this, but it's the, when parents are using the technology and the children are around, no one is talking to the child. And that's really a problem. So their social, emotional development is not as good. Same thing with just learning like a word acquisition. That's also a problem. Now, I tell people often, let's say you're watching a heated basketball game while your child is in the room, while your toddler's in the room. You can negate some of this negative effect by talking to them about what's on the screen. I don't know how much it's gonna work when they're really under two, but to say, did you see that shot? And oh my goodness, and really try and interact with them about that, you can negate some of those negative experiences. But otherwise, I really try and explain to parents, there should be zero screen time even in the background when a toddler is around.
I think the background noise affects learning as well. So especially young children can only focus on one thing. So if they're trying to do something and have background noise, there's studies that show that they don't learn as well. And it's more pronounced at the younger ages.
How about video chatting, okay? What about video chatting with a child who's under the age of 18 months, okay? So let's say I'm the parent and I'm video chatting with my friends or parents or something like that, and my kid is playing there on the ground. Is that okay? And thumbs up or thumbs down?
So the child is video.
Child is playing here or, you know, being held by the other parent in the environment, and I'm video chatting with my friends or my family. Thumbs up or thumbs down? And?
Okay.
Wow. Okay, we're getting thumbs down. Tell me why. Because, and why, truthfully, why is that any different than my having a phone call with my parent in the presence of the children?
Also hard to do. Anyone who really actually has a 13-month-old and tries to talk on the phone knows you can't talk very long at all. This is a really quick kind of I'll call you later when the child is asleep. So unless you're going to be kind of neglecting that toddler, you can't really do it. And it certainly is not helping them in any way, shape, or form. I'm not saying you can never use the phone. Just know that you're not doing a beneficial thing for the child.
Okay. Karen?
I agree. It's a distraction, but like, there's life. So if you get a phone call, you're going to get a phone call. But I think, you know, where video chat can be used for a child to see their grandma in Hong Kong and have, you know, a brief conversation with them, that's a special experience that they wouldn't otherwise be able to have. So that's very different.
But even the AAP says not under 18 months. And I think that's partly the reality of actually trying to get a 15-month-old to look at the screen. I mean, it really is a quick interaction. You're done. You can measure that in seconds.
Yeah, and I remember when my daughter was 2 years old and my mother was in Hong Kong, she would actually try to get into the screen so that my mom could hold her. So it's really not a normal experience for them, but it's still, they enjoyed seeing each other.
Yeah, so. But seconds to minutes.
Right.
Yeah. We've talked a lot now about the negative effects, the bad stuff. Let's give technology its due a little bit. What's a positive aspect of using this technology with kids?
I think for us, particularly now that we're part of Khan Academy, even in the US, there are 4 million children entering kindergarten every year, and only 2/3 of them are ready for kindergarten. And so if you look at low-income populations that don't have a lot of resources at home and don't have good, strong preschool programs, their readiness is under half of them are ready for kindergarten. And even if you look at high income and middle income, it's only 75% are ready. So there's an opportunity for technology to be a delivery mechanism, to have books, to have good educational experiences for children when designed particularly for those age groups and used in moderation.
Anne?
I agree.
Yeah?
The thing that we'd love for the children to maybe experience a general sense of well-being and calmness going on in the classroom, maybe a drama-free zone where politics and silly things aren't happening, and the child can just learn to be with themselves and experience something closer to quiet. And therefore, if you have an excitement thing and you look at it and then it's calm, that media could be the wonderful thing that gives them a lot of vocabulary that they wouldn't have if they were, maybe a parent doesn't, maybe you're learning English and you speak two languages at home in school and you would want to hear them hear English spoken in complete sentences. There could be ways that you really give them that gift. Or watching, maybe, I don't know about this, but watching a musician play an instrument, live instrument. My husband's a preschool rock star, and he's always bringing his friends with instruments into the classroom so the kids can feel the bass and feel the guitar and the mandolin and the banjo. And that reality of it really resonates. But they may go home and say, Mom, I want to hear more banjo music.
As they get older, I mean, this is more my experience just in my own adolescence. When one of them was taking an instrument a few years ago through the middle school, there was an app where they would play for the app that then got downloaded to the music teacher. This is a public school, and that was, I thought, a fantastic use for the technology.
Right. So really powerful uses, particularly as the kids get a little older and they are really trying to learn specific skills, interact with people, as you said, have that vocabulary exposure too. It is an extraordinary differentiator of whether the child comes into kindergarten with a large vocabulary or with having some familiarity
with words. Or pre-numeracy, which is actually shown to be the largest predictor in long-term academic success, and that's not always viewed as such. And parents don't always know what's appropriate for different ages, so being something that can show parents, especially if they're co-playing with their child, what is age-appropriate and showing them sort of different ways of teaching it.
Mm-hmm. And what about reading with a child and an app? I mean, Carolyn,
yeah,
DuckDuckGoose
has that. Absolutely. So there's great ways for parents. Parents should, when they can, use it like a book and read with their child. I think the design of the e-books has to be very deliberate for young children, because if there's lots of interactive extraneous noises, that's distracting and will take away from the story. So actually ebooks that are designed with reading in mind, that have a read aloud mode or read to me mode, makes a lot of sense and can help a lot with vocabulary. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Are there any good apps for mindfulness for children, or any good apps that you have seen that help teach children about emotions and about how to manage their emotions?
So I have a good friend of mine who's one of the co-founders of smartfeed.com, and you can really create your child's profile. I think the youngest age might be 2, and you know, all the way up through 18. And you can click on all the different categories, and mindfulness is at least one of their categories, and emotional stuff having to do with emotions. But I mean, the list goes on and on of the things that you want to expose your child to. And then it gives you back recommendations both on TV shows and movies and apps that are right in the category of the things that you really want to dial in. So I don't personally know any apps, but I know great sources now for tapping into the technology for someone who does know that to share it with me.
Anything you guys have seen?
We've done a social emotional app called Peekazoo, which shows different animals with different emotional states in a playful way. The children can identify which one is angry or which one's sad, and so that's mm-hmm. a social emotional one.
I don't know any, but I'll look it up.
One of the things that we agreed as a panel to do for you when this is over is we're putting together a few resources that we think are meaningful, and I think that the museum is going to send those out to you in email if you've given your email address to them. So we'll try to include a few of these things. Full disclosure, won't be comprehensive, but it'll be a few references that we think will be helpful and maybe key off of some of these questions as well, particularly some of the questions about studies and what research we are familiar with. If you are not familiar with Common Sense Media, that is a terrific resource for parents. It tries to do a good job of identifying both movies or video resources as well as app resources that have educational elements as well. So I highly recommend that as well. where does YouTube fit into all of this? We've talked about interactive devices. We've talked a tiny bit about television. YouTube is a little bit like television, but can also be interactive. It can be highly educational. It can be a total waste of time. There are many, many lolcats on YouTube. So where does YouTube fit into all of this?
So I'm actually not a huge fan of using YouTube for children, particularly when they're using it themselves, because of all the recommended things on the right-hand side, and I think it's not really curated for young children. That's why we created an app that was designed to have educational video content, but also interactive, actionable.
But it's also YouTube EDU.
EDU, but there's also YouTube Kids that's particularly designed for preschool kids, but you do some searching on that, it's not foolproof.
Still not excited, okay.
Yeah.
And?
Well, at the older level, yesterday, I was at Friday, we were looking at microscopes. And so the third, fourth, and fifth graders, we were looking at the difference between a telescope and a microscope. And then later on, they went on a field trip. I was on Thursday, because on Friday, they went to Zeum, and they did claymation. Mm-hmm. So there were some great videos on how to do claymation. And they were quite impressed with those. So there are times when YouTube's my friend, but in an appropriate setting.
Okay.
I think it just needs to be very deliberate. So, my children get junk food sometimes. They just do. And so this might end up falling into that category if you're not watching it first yourself to really know what they're going to get. I'm not an authority on this, so this is why I like going to Common Sense Media or SmartFeed.com. Come to just kind of get, well, so people who are paying attention, what did they say in their editorial on these sites? Because I don't know. But that is in the category of, like, I'm not so sure. Again, my kids do sometimes get junk food. It should not be the majority of time. And certainly in the toddlers, you want to minimize because they just don't have a whole lot of space for something else.
So here's a fascinating question. So I'll read the whole question. The writer writes, sometimes it's impossible to keep a child from seeing a screen. For example, on airplanes where they're on every seat, or restaurants where they're on the walls. What responsibility should society have to slow down the sort of screeniness of our world? Okay, they didn't say screeniness, sorry. But what right should parents of young children have to ask to have it turned off?
That's loaded.
That's loaded.
I do want to just emphasize that so much of what the kids affects the children is what's happening in the home. So people worry so much about what's outside their home. I really want to emphasize, worry about what's in your home. So you're not going to be able to control the snacks at a birthday party. You're just not. And so, but if you don't have that snacky stuff all the time at home, that's going to help them. That's going to send a message. I remember I had my college roommate. They had zero junk food at home. Zero. And, I came from a household where they didn't have that strict rule. And she was, in college, just went nuts and had lots of junk, and then dialed it all the way back to what she grew up with, because for her first 18 years, that's what she had at home. So even though in college she got exposed to all this stuff, I just thought, yeah, they set a great foundation, those parents, because she does not turn, she as soon as she had the freedom and went crazy, she came back down to what she had at home. So as much as I want society to be careful, I just think that what's happening in the home is going to be more critical, actually.
I think, unfortunately or unfortunately, it's the world that we live in. There are pros and cons of technology and how we use it as adults. And going back to your comment about raising an adult, I think they're growing up in this digital world, and gradually having them understand how to use technology in a thoughtful and purposeful way, I think, is probably a big goal of ours.
Mm-hmm. I would agree.
So we've learned, I think, or I've learned, some pretty fascinating things. I love Iris's point about what is under your control. What is under your control in your home? What is under your control in your interaction with children? We've talked about the role of screens or other media when people are eating and how you can control that. We've talked about parents' ability to control it, maybe also to make sure it's not interrupting sleep, that it's not disrupting sleep. We know there's plenty of research that talks about how behavioral changes do come when we're all underslept. And we've talked a lot about the role of parents as role models, as how you're interacting with technology, as working with your children, interacting with your children. We've also talked about some of the cornerstones that you should look for when you are engaging with media. Carolyn made reference to kind of 4 points. Is the media kind of active? Is there active learning involved? Is it engaging to the child? Is it really mindful of the materials that are being presented? And sort of, is it social? Is it kind of encouraging socialness? And we've talked about how, at the end of the day, interacting with your child, as Anne has pointed out so beautifully, interacting with your child, having those conversations, using blocks, using those things, at the end of the day, really matters. As we wrap up, and I'm going to wrap up a little early because it is a beautiful day and you should take your kids outside and have some fun with them today. As we wrap up, what would be, again, your guidance for parents with young children about as they are living our complex lives? What else, what other parting words do you want to give these folks about how to think about this and, you know, both the good and the bad? It's a pretty broad question.
Okay. I think my biggest take-home message is be very mindful and purposeful about what young children are getting exposed to. The media, you want to be really careful that it's not just a pacifier, because it's a harmful pacifier. It can be a harmful pacifier. And to really put the time investment that we're learning more and more makes a difference, because there are people who study this day and night on how to do this, a lot of them parents and, you know, wanting to figure out how to do things for their own children. So whether it's Common Sense Media or smartfeed.com, trying to really be purposeful about what are we going to allow. And the AAP actually had put out through the Healthy Families, I think this is one of the resources I left with you guys, having on healthychildren.org a media use plan, where at every age you can go on there and have your schedule, your child's schedule for the day, and really try to think about it with what time of the day are we going to use this? Are we going to just every time we get in the car, as there that 1 hour that a 2 to 5 year old can have, not only are we going to be careful about what they use, but really be mindful about like exactly how much, and think ahead and plan in a way that I know is really hard, especially as a busy parent, but that it can make a difference.
Yeah, I'll echo those points in using technology, as my friend Lorraine here says, in a purposeful way, not just as a pastime. And thinking carefully about why are you using technology, and what's the purpose? What is it bringing to our lives?
And really, I think, as you pointed out earlier too, kind of looking at the different resources you're giving your kids and asking some questions about, you know, is this really valuable? Is this kind of giving them the sort of skill opportunities that you're interested in? Or is it just plain?
I think there's that feeling by the end of the day that your parents really like you and they're with you and they enjoyed you. And whatever it is you did that day, can you end that day with, oh, I'm just so glad you're here? Because that's what they'll take down in their heart and wake up the next morning with, they're glad I'm here.
I think that is such a perfect point to wrap this conversation up with. Technology is not here to raise our children. We are. And as Anne said, if they are ending the day feeling loved, if they are ending the day feeling that they engaged with you, that will make all of the difference. As I said, the panel will pull together some of these resources to the degree that we have access to research that touches on some of these points. We'll try to include that. In my experience, the research isn't perfect. It isn't comprehensive. It doesn't answer every question. But we will share the resources that we have. Thank you. Please join me in thanking this fantastic panel for spending the afternoon.